Hello, this is Brent Kinniston.
Hey, Brent. Steve, let's take this later. I mean, this is Brent. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be with you guys.
Great being with you.
It's happy,
happy Father's Day.
I don't want to interrupt the current conversation. You're welcome to.
Oh, we're very flexible.
I had a really great morning. I downloaded your last show and listened to the content.
Uh-huh.
And you guys are definitely men after my own heart. I have to tell you, I was just in Australia in February, and I actually conducted a scientific experiment to prove once and for all, does water flow in the opposite direction?
Did you document it, videotape it, and provide third and fourth party witnesses?
It's not certified, but I did come to a conclusive result, which I didn't expect.
Okay.
Yeah.
What
was the case? Water does flow clockwise. And so I had read that because of various effects on the earth that water should flow counterclockwise in Australia. And the result was really surprising. And that is, in Australia, they have engineered toilets, at least in the cities where I visited, to not let the water turn in either direction, but it just drops straight down. And so after a number of tests, I realized the Australians simply don't want us to know. But fortunately, I had the control of a sink. Sinks are pretty common worldwide, and unfortunately, the water did flow clockwise in the sink. So that was also unexpected.
I think the effect
truth is
does work
larger,
with weather patterns.
Larger quantities of water, like storms, do in fact flow counterclockwise.
Spence, what did you say? You
said I think that the phenomenon does work with weather, but I don't think it's related necessarily to gravity.
Oh, come on, Spence.
No, I think weather patterns do. If you look at the globe, the way
you're a party pooper.
No, that particular effect is not. It's not affected by. You know, people took that to mean, oh, it means that it's going to happen everywhere and everything, when it's just related, really. What you see from satellites is weather patterns. Tornado, hurricanes spin in one direction in the northern hemisphere and another direction in the southern hemisphere.
It's the water flow uphill in Australia.
It says the water in U.S. embassies around the world drains clockwise.
All right, Brent. So you're a lucky dog. LuckyDogApps.com. What is your background?
LuckyDogApps.com.
What's your background?
Well, I have been programming from a very young age. I love computers. It's a passion for me. When I was young, about 8 years old, my father, whenever we would ask for a video game, he would go and buy a book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys remember back in the Commodore 64 days.
Turbo Pascal?
You could buy magazines that had entire applications.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Thousands of lines of code that you could type in and try yourself.
Yeah. TI-99-4A.
Ever since then. What's that?
TI-99-4A was mine.
Yes.
The TI.
Oh.
Yeah,
I started with CPM, actually, on a televideo, and then worked up from there. But it definitely is a passion for me. One challenge since then, as I've gone through schooling and work, is to stay ahead of the curve. And I find that really interesting and fun. And I kind of have this little example. People ask me, so you probably should know a lot about computers, and they always want me to come and fix their computer problem.
Yeah.
But I tell them, you know, I have what I call a line of knowledge that grows bigger and bigger with my experience, but around that line you can draw a circle, and that's the circle of my ignorance. So as I learn more, I realize there's a lot more out there that I don't know.
Which is fine, because that always leaves more to learn.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of fun, too.
More recently, around the turn of the century, I went to school. I went to a couple of colleges out west in Utah, and then I went on to study at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, where I studied Japanese. And I served in the Utah Army National Guard as a linguist, working in languages of Russian, Estonian, and Japanese.
Wow.
And so I've had an opportunity to rub shoulders with a lot of really talented, hardworking people in the military, and have had opportunities to leverage those skills in the civilian world as well. I now work for a consultancy and have been for the last number of years. That's based out of the Washington, D.C. area, Trivir, and we provide consulting services for multiple industry verticals worldwide. But I've been doing a lot of focus with Lucky Dog Apps for writing applications to help people learn and to have a positive, entertaining, and effective experience in the mobile platform. And we're finding that with language acquisition, this is a wonderful tool because your mind is always ready to learn. You're standing in a line, sitting on a bus, waiting in a car. Your mind is always ready to learn. You don't necessarily need to wait until you're sitting at a computer with a CD-ROM and a monitor, you know.
Right. So you developed apps. Are we talking apps for just for the iPhone or apps for mobile devices in general?
Well, I've been focusing with LuckyDogApps.com first on the iPhone space.
Okay.
I actually am an Android user myself, but my wife is an iPhone user, so we kind of have both worlds here. And I will ultimately move over into the Android space and the Windows mobile space, but I'm focusing most of my efforts on the iPhone platform currently. So users that have iPod Touch, iPhone, or iPad can download our apps. And we currently have three apps in the iTunes store. One is called Pashto, which is a language of Afghanistan, spoken by the Taliban. And that's a really interesting app. It has been really fun to hear the feedback on that one. I partnered with a retired university professor from Brigham Young University, Dr. Robert W. Blair, and his son, Del Blair. They're linguists that have contributed a lot of new approaches to language learning. And they had this idea that going over in our efforts out there, making a friend or building an alliance is far more valuable than using a weapon. And they had the idea that if we could write an app that would allow soldiers getting on the airplane to learn enough of the language to make friends before they hit the ground, that would be fabulous and hopefully contribute to us building more alliances on the ground. And together we did achieve that goal, I believe. Our Pashto app, you can download it for a couple of bucks, $1.99, and within minutes, you definitely can learn enough phrases to begin conversing with our friends over there in Afghanistan.
Really? I need to go look at that. That's interesting.
Pretty interesting. I really wish that when I was a linguist in the military that I had access to this mobile technology, you know, all of that power in your pocket. In addition, yes.
So these apps are, it's not something that you talk into the phone and it translates for you. It actually teaches you.
Yes. And specifically the Pashto app uses a mnemonic device called a Velcro patch. It's something that sticks to your brain. Once you see it and experience it on your mobile phone, you can never forget it. And so these Velcro patches are mnemonic devices that contain a picture, a meaning, and a sound. And then there is a little bit of a game or like a little bit of a training session, usually less than a minute. And once you get through that, you will always remember that conversation or that phrase for later use. And then there are some games and things that you can play with to actually put that knowledge to use.
So you're touching three different parts of the brain with one memory.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're getting that sticky effect. And so it's a very effective way to learn phrases. Now, this isn't like a dictionary or a translator. But it's something that could give you, within 50 minutes, within less than an hour, more than 50 phrases to begin using and making friends. And one of the funny things about my background is I had an opportunity to serve a mission for my church in the Baltic countries, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed something kind of funny, a phenomenon I didn't expect. When you go to a foreign land and just make the effort to try to learn their language and their culture, it's very endearing to them. At least in most of the countries that I've been in, people are much more interested, it seems, in being patient and making a friendship with you when you go the extra distance to try to learn their language like that. I remember several Russians just kissing us, even if they weren't interested in what we were talking about as missionaries. They would kiss us on both cheeks and say, "I can't believe you Americans are so nice."
Good, thank you.
We were taught something differently.
Okay, so now what about projects in the enterprise? I mean, you know,
big
time stuff.
We
not that this is small.
Another application for Arabic study, and this is a slightly different focus. It's not for beginning learners. This is for serious linguists like you would have in the military or within the university environment that already know Arabic, modern standard Arabic, but need to improve it so that they can operate efficiently in the language. We release that to the public, and now we're working in a few areas. One of the areas is an interesting one, dealing with my military past, but now we're looking into ways to take this technology that helps existing serious linguists working in Arabic and deploy this information or this app technology within the enterprise. So let's say you run a base where you have military folks there studying the language or working in the language. Let's say you have 8,000 soldiers or Marines there working for you, and you have 8,000 iPod touches. How do you get this application technology onto all those iPod touches? You have them all go to the iTunes store and order independently? Or do you set up some kind of a server locally that allows you to push out those apps with the exact configuration that you want and with the exact content that you want automatically from one point within your enterprise?
Right, that's the way to do it, yeah.
So that's where we're working now, and it's kind of interesting. This begins to take us into an environment referred to as mobile device management, or MDM. And in addition to pushing content, you can push other controls like profile settings, wireless network configuration settings, VPN settings. It also helps you with auditing. So if you're collecting information about what users are doing on their mobile devices, you can pull this in through an MDM solution. This is kind of where we're moving to. I'm still pursuing multiple efforts and projects for the public. But as far as the military goes, where you have large groups of focused efforts around Pashto or Arabic, we're looking into ways to allow that institution to manage it from within their own firewall.
Are you finding that there are major differences between managing, for example, an Android device as opposed to an Apple device because of the way Apple controls access to the App Store, for example? I know I was recently in a program where I was running alpha software on an iPad internally inside my company, and it was quite a process to get registered and then to finally get to the point where we could internally just go to a link and download software. So it was... not that it was a big challenge, but it was something that had to go through a process before you could invoke to go and register, you know, to register with Apple and go through the whole developer process.
Mr. Jobs really likes to keep things locked down, doesn't he?
Yes. Good and bad. In that good, in that the control,
but
hardware is out there, and it's all has to. There's very little changes between devices, so it's easy to manage. In the Windows world, it's just, you know, anybody can build a Windows-based computer, and it may or may not work.
Well, but wait a second. I've got a quick question for you, Spence, and it's sort of like yes or no. Are you saying that if you develop your own application, you cannot run it on your iPad?
No. If you want to distribute it inside the company,
right?
There are developers who are part of the Apple developers program, where they get all the tools that the software developers toolkit and so on, and they can develop apps all day long.
Okay.
Push it out as an alpha version to other employees in the company and have a web page where you can download it internally.
Okay.
If they had to go through a process of setting up a server and having I had to register my device. I had to send them essentially what was the serial number of my device in order to register to work with the server. It's not wide open. They can't just put the code up on a web page. Here, go attach with your iPad and it will happen.
Spence, I said it was a yes or no.
There is no yes or no.
Well, I mean, I understand. Yeah.
It's a really good question. And to answer it, the answer is yes. Each individual platform has its own set of constraints, security policies, and you have to have a unique approach for that platform. There's something called MEEP. That we've been looking into for a couple of areas. And MEEP allows you to create more of an enterprise standard for how some of those processes would take place, no matter what platform you're working with. It's kind of a unified tool set, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that allows you to define policy and procedure and content, and then have MEEP go and individually translate that for every platform to understand. That stands for MEAP, Mobile Enterprise Application Platform. But for Apple, as was mentioned, there are many steps you need to take to register a device as an alpha device. And the process for deploying software inside of your enterprise is very similar to that. You register each device and have them activated to the system, if you will. And then from that point, you can push out and administer to them. Apple is very tight with security, and I really like the model. At the application level, each application runs in almost like a little sandbox. You have very limited access to other content on the phone. And then they take that same model and apply it as you go higher in the stack. So even in the enterprise network, specific functions are only accessible within their process space. So the security model is maintained all the way up. And Android has a different approach, and it is much more open. But I believe with MEEP or some kind of unified process, and these processes are still emerging, but I believe with a higher level process, it's much easier to manage at the enterprise level and leave the nitty-gritty details to the connectors or drivers at the bottom level to implement it on those individual platforms.
Hmm. Mobile applications, mobile device applications are becoming, I mean, really something that everybody's looking for. And earlier in the show, I mentioned that if anybody out there knows how to write apps, I would love to have an app for the show that somebody could go on the iPhone and just click and get to that URL that gives the audio. But how did you get into the mobile development? What took you that route?
Well, I've always been interested in technology that is easily accessible. And I started playing around with mobile development on the Palm platform. I don't know how many of you had a Palm Pilot. I started working with Java on the Palm platform. And when I had created a couple of useful applications and utilities, I looked into how I would get these out to other people on the market, and it was very difficult. Did you know in order to buy shelf space at a retailer store, you're looking at serious money to put that in front of the public audience?
Right.
But Apple and Google, and Apple at first, made it possible for us indie programmers or lay programmers to put our content in front of the whole world for a very minimal cost. And once Apple made that possible, I really became interested in it. And so we invested in an iPod Touch and later upgraded that to an iPhone. And it's been so fun. One piece of advice I would give to you if you're thinking about moving one of your applications or programs or ideas into the market is don't sit on it. Play with it and get something out there, even if it's not perfect. a friend of mine who lives in Raleigh, North Carolina, actually, recently developed a beer diary to keep track of the various beers that he samples all over the place. And he did it just as kind of a hobby, and he was going to wait until it was just right to release to the public. I told him, no, you need to get that out there now, because as you solidify this idea and get it to where you want it to be, the feedback from all of the people trying it and playing with it, that's going to be very valuable to you in your development process. And so he went ahead and put it out, even though it wasn't perfect, didn't have the features that he wanted yet, and it wasn't fully stable, but he released it. And so now, some months later, Beer Diary has multiple thousands of users. He has thousands of customers that are providing that feedback. And so now he's collaborating with a huge group of people to really build out and realize the value and the potential of his idea.
And everybody's getting drunk together. And it's all documented.
That's the thing, is that type of platform encourages collaboration. It encourages other people with similar interests to get involved. And if they've got the knowledge, you know, you've, as you say, you've got so many new, fresh ideas that you had never even thought about coming to you that you can then implement.
Yeah. Another thing that is really important for the mobile platform, for me as a user and for me as a developer, is content. The application that you write or that you produce must have very focused content. Did you know that the average amount of time a user uses a mobile application is less than 30 seconds?
Wow.
You may see this in your own mobile app use, but in a given day, you'll bounce around between those apps really quickly. And so it's important. It's different than a desktop application where it might load when the machine loads and then it's there until the machine shuts down. In a mobile space, you have just a few seconds, in many cases, to provide value before that app closes. And so it's recommended that we focus on having the app do one thing, and one thing really well, and to have it do it quickly. That's why I've really moved into education on the mobile platform. I feel like the human brain is always ready to learn, and with all that knowledge just waiting to be taught to you in your pocket, you can have it available instantly. And so these language apps that we're working on, and even other apps, we have an LDS trivia app that has a lot of information about LDS, U.S., and world history. And in moments, you can learn much.
Mike, are you there?
Yeah, ignore me for now.
Oh, well, you're coming through, though, and it's... Kind of weird.
Yep, just ignore me for now.
Ignore him. All right, I'm ignoring you. Turn down your volume. Your mic, I mean. Anybody else has any questions for Brent? Spence? Steve?
I did. Are you familiar with, as a linguist, familiar with the application SpeechTrans?
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that that's awesome application? I actually have
one. We went to a conference at the Pentagon in December, where we demonstrated our Pashto and Arabic teaching technology. We were there partnered with Global Language Systems (GLS), and they're the ones that provide our Arabic content. And we met with the speech trans guys out there, and that is a fantastic technology. Their apps allow you to take audio or text, input it into the app, and it will translate it into the target language. It's pretty interesting and useful stuff.
But requires a network connection.
Currently, yes.
Yes, yeah, you've got to have the back, because that's they go back to a Nuance server, which does the text-to-speech or speech to text, and it does a translation, and it puts it back to a Nuance server to put it back into speech. So, but it happens pretty quick. But you got to it requires a minimum 3G network. So I guess in the field it would not be as useful as it would be. You know,
it wouldn't be as useful as you would think it could be.
Yeah,
I can see a lot of situations where this would be great. Ah, me no speak English. Ah, well,
it's
just
for tourist stuff. It's ideal, isn't it?
Yeah.
My personal opinion, having worked in multiple countries, especially in places like Southeast Asia and Japan and other countries out there, if you can make some effort on your own to learn the language, mm-hmm. to speak it face-to-face with them, politically it buys you a lot of capital.
I'd agree with that, definitely. I've had some experience with German.
It's nice to have a machine to help you in that process. But if there are ways to acquire language rapidly, which we believe there are now, that we're researching and implementing for the mobile platform,
mm-hmm.
In that case, I think that you can ultimately be more effective if you can speak it face-to-face and show that you've made that effort to learn about them and their culture. I would walk into lots of meetings with the Japanese, and they would say things, oh, great. They sent another dumb American to come in and try to solve our problem. And I would go up to the front of the room and tell them, please don't worry. I understand your language. And I would tell them in Japanese, I speak your language, and I understand your problem, and I know that together we can find a solution. And they were just blown away that some weirdo from America could actually speak their language. And it really helped us to go a lot farther than I think I could have.
Very nice.
Machine-assisted technology.
Steve, you were saying something?
You're saying when I went to work in Germany is a prime example there. That they're a very proud nation, and if you go and you just, you know, you're adamant, I don't speak your language, I only speak English, even though the majority of people over there do speak English. If you try, and if you actually give it a go to try and sort of pidgin German, to sort of just say the odd word, you can see that their face sort of brightens up as they say, you're making an effort, and then mm-hmm. they want to help you. So I can relate to exactly what you're saying there, Dan.
Yeah, I can as well, and experiences I've had in France.
Oh, they're the French, though. They're just weird over there.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because you go at like, other parts of France outside of Paris, especially if you go to the coast, where Normandy is, very friendly. But in Paris, you just got this idea that, you know, it wasn't a very nice atmosphere. But if you did make the effort, if the first words out of your mouth weren't parlez-vous anglais, then then they would react, but, you know, react better. I just
really
came in my office here and stepped on my turned the switch on my shredder, so it's a weird noise.
Buzzman on the chat is saying to ask you, Brent, what do you think of the Windows Phone 7?
You know, I've been thinking in my mind that I would move from Apple development over to Android next. But I was doing a triathlon at the beginning of this year, and I was in this freezing cold water, and I thought everybody in the water with me right now is crazy. And right then, the guy next to me started talking with me, and he was a retired Marine working for Microsoft. And we got talking, and he explained to me that he was actually running a program at Microsoft to recruit former military for their excellent project management skills and hard work ethic. And he talked to me a lot about Windows mobile development. And after that conversation, that has definitely come onto my radar. And I think that I have a strong interest in moving towards Windows mobile support for our applications and our linguistic technology in the very near future, hopefully before the end of this year.
Nice. Okay. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to add?
I really appreciate the time that you've given me to talk with you guys today. If anybody has any other questions relating to mobile device management or application development process and best practices and such, I'm always willing to discuss. I love learning and collaborating with others.
All right.
You can reach me at Brent@LuckyDogApps.com.
Brent@LuckyDogApps.com.
Yes.
Thanks, Brent.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you gentlemen today.
Thank you, Brent. Thank you for taking the time, and go ahead and enjoy the family now. Have a happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to all of those fathers out there.
Take care, and we'll talk again.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Brent.